Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Nathaniel Gillis. Before I bring him on, just a couple of announcements. You can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Go check us out on Rockfin. That's where you get our awesome premium content that you can't find anywhere else. You get our regular shows, and best of all the amazing content from every creator that is there on Rockfin. Also, check out the podcasts that we feature on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You get those at our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. And follow us on Facebook. Follow us there for any show announcements and updates. And finally, guys, we're living in extremely unsure times, and an emergency food supply would be a perfect investment right now. Check out the Experts in Emergency Preparedness, My Patriot Supply. Right now, you can get up to $100 off a four-week supply of their awesome food. Stays good in storage for up to 25 years. Click that link in the description. Check out what they have to offer. That's My Patriot Supply. Today, I want to welcome back to the show Nathaniel Gillis. He is a religious demonologist and author. After living in a haunted house, he spent 20 years researching what it was he encountered. He has sought to redefine the nature of the haunting phenomena, ghosts, and high strangeness. He's often quoted for his concept of the demonic. The reason they are playing by different rules is because they are playing a different game. Nathaniel, welcome back. How you doing?
Thank you for having me back, man. It's good to be back. And I'm post-COVID. I lost about 25 pounds. And believe it or not, I know the camera adds about 20 more. But it's good to be back. And I want to say something for everybody that's gonna watch this. You know, when I got COVID, I had to reschedule with Chris like two or three times. And I want to say, as a host, he was gracious. He was kind and understanding about it all. And you know, I was just too sick to do the show. But I want to thank him personally for being understanding and working with me to get me back on.
Oh, yeah, of course, man. I mean, you have COVID, you get sick. There's nothing you can do about that. Yeah. So, of course, man.
It was bad.
Yeah. From what I heard, it was bad. And I appreciate you coming back on. But like you said, you know, hell of a weight loss program, right?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. Like I shrunk, and now I have to like buy some new clothes. So I think out of everything, that was basically the only silver lining right. from getting that dreaded thing. I'm glad to be back with you guys.
I'm glad you got over it. And, you know, I know you still have a few residual effects, but for the most part, I'm glad you survived and you're back here on the show. So I've been looking forward to this. Tonight, I want to go even deeper with our discussion that we started last time you were on about the possibilities of, you know, what are extraterrestrials? Are they demons? Are they angels? Are they something else? Right. What are the connections to things like implants and demonic possession? And I also want to get your insights into the possible existence of entities that you look into, like incubi spirits, soul hunters, and what you call molters, which I find very interesting. Yeah. And I want to start with probably what are, for you, some of the most obvious connections we should look at when it comes to deciphering what exactly these entities are, and those connections that really make you wonder and if this is a paranormal phenomenon or something like extraterrestrials.
I'm not really buying into the extraterrestrial hypothesis at this time. I realize it's a popular motif amongst many ufologists, but I think that a lot of the deep thinkers, and I'm not including myself into this, but people like Jacques Vallée, John Keel, and a bunch of the greats, they too have pretty much shed the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Whatever we're dealing with is interdimensional. I was talking to another researcher about this. It's a hypothesis, a theory, a hypothesis that I'm working on myself, dealing with portals. And this kind of really explains why it is the extraterrestrial thing doesn't work for me. When we're dealing with people that are being picked up in ships, one fascinating aspect about that phenomenon is you could be picked up in a ship, according to their abduction accounts. The ship itself looks like it's 10 feet in diameter. But once you get into it, it's as large as an aircraft carrier. So it's not just nuts and bolts, but there's dimensionality to it. And it's as if that we're dealing, and this is what my theory is, I call it the finger in the water. When you're a goldfish and someone dips their finger in the water, you're looking at a very small percentage of the finger itself. And so at that moment, you have ufologists, parapsychologists, and people like Nick West who are out there on Twitter hypothesizing the dimensionality of that small tip of the finger. But what we have to realize, guys, is that it's not just nuts and bolts. This is actually, according to my research, a portal to their dimension. So what happens is once you get into that ship, you're out of the water and now you're in its own space-time continuum. You're in its own its own physics. And so when you go from this dimension into their portal in that dimension, now they can do things to you in that dimension they cannot do in this. And so that's why I believe when we're looking at the physicality of this phenomenon, I think it's important to realize we're not just dealing with nuts and bolts. We're dealing with a dimension shift, almost as if when you step into the very tip of the finger, then you realize, oh my God, there's more of the ship outside of this dimension than what we're seeing just on the underneath the surface of the water. So I'm going to take that, I want to put it to the side, and I want to answer your other question. The number one aspect of my work that concerns the connection between the UFO abduction phenomenon and demonology is the fact that the incubi concept that permeated Europe and even modern times, the incubi situation was not so much of an entity as much as it was a way that these entities would groom their victims into sexual acts. Now what do I mean by that? I think that as a researcher, a good researcher needs to look at the footprints in the snow and understand what they're leading us towards. We can't be one-dimensional in thinking. So what do I mean by this? So to watch this. So when we're dealing with the incubus cases or incubi, the succubi cases, I believe that we're dealing with the same entities that will manifest to their victims based upon their victimology. If they're looking for semen secretion, they will manifest to the man as a woman primarily. And then vice versa. In order to inseminate the woman with the seed they just extracted, they will appear to the woman as a man. And then inseminate them. So we would call that in demonology, incubi and succubi. But I want to stress this. We're not just dealing with entities. That's one-dimensional, antiquated dogma. Forget entities. We're not dealing with entities with personalities and personas. That's the incubi situation is just a means to an end for these entities. And when you get into the UFO abduction accounts, we see the incubi cases everywhere. right? So that's not just, you know, something that's limited to the pages and literature of demonology. Again, it's a modus operandi. It's a mask that these entities employ in order to get what they want from us. So what do I, so and I'll finish my point here in a second. This has been my first show in months, man. So
no, it's great. Go for it, man.
All right. So we got to get rid of that thinking. In addition to that, we've got to abandon at all costs the idea of aliens versus demons. Why? Because it's no different than our ancestors when they demonized disincarnate consciousness. What are we doing now? We just have a different word for it. It's alien to us. And so what happens is we have people that, and I won't mention them, but people that are Twitter trolls who like to fancy themselves thinkers, and they frown upon the religious ancestry and say, well, they're not demons. And then they start, you know, talking like Christopher Hitchens and kind of transposing ideas and basically saying that because religion, organized religion, was a pretty messed up, jacked up, messed up thing, that we have a right to discredit their personal testimonies regarding these creatures. I think that's stupid. I think it's ignorant. And I think that it's a pervasive stench in the nostrils of intellectualism. We cannot think like that because we have victims who experience real phenomena just like we have them today. And they may have misinterpreted it. They may have given these entities different names. But if we're real researchers, we need to strip it from the dogma, look at the data, and say, forget what they called these entities. What did they experience? What are their testimonies regarding the phenomenon? And I think the sooner we do that and go through the witch era literature, demonology of the Middle Ages, and read all of these different demonologists, the sooner we do that, the more we'll realize that we're not alone in this phenomenon. We've experienced this for thousands of years. What's happened, though, is that there are many people who, for whatever reason, you know, they want to limit the research to certain periods of history. And I think that is the crux of the argument, aliens versus demons. I think that we need to back up and punt and say, listen, forget the titles that we'd like to crown them with. Look at the phenomenon. What are they doing to us? And so I think that's my position at this point.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And there's a lot of points that I want to break down in there, starting with the different dimensions. What are your thoughts on these dimensions? Do you think that they are just existing right beyond the spectrum of our vision? And do you think there are multiple different dimensions or reality that, you know, might be beyond our perception?
I think the veil is thin. And whenever I do a lecture, I always mention how they are present with but absent from us. And so when we get into the demonological research, we have many cases where the entities will tell us, I watch you as you sleep. So they're just almost, they're almost outside of our peripheral vision. They manifest when they want to. In antiquity, we had cases. This is wild, Chris. Wild, brother. God, I look so fat. I'll switch it up. I got like, I don't know what happened. I gained all my COVID weight back again. No. So what we had back in the day, man, is we had these entities that were pulling moisture out of the air, coagulated water, solidifying it in their image, and then stepping into it. Now they have an air body. It's wild stuff. But again, to answer your question, you know, that's the technology they have, and we're pretty much babies compared to them. But I do believe that they exist in a dimension that in many abduction accounts they're pulling us into. In addition to that, I do believe that whatever dimension they're existing in, we would know that as death. A limited understanding, obviously, on our portion of it. But it would be death. We're talking about disembodied or what's called discorporate consciousness that's pulled out of the body but exists independent. It has autonomy, independent of the body. We see cases like that with Betty and Bob Luca, where Betty Luca is going to bed, Bob's going to bed, and they go into their room. Bob's on the edge of the bed putting socks on. And in a fleeting moment, Betty Luca, it was an abduction account, But at one fleeting moment, she sees him in two places at once in the room. They had pulled Bob Luca out of Bob Luca. So ufology, especially, my God, forget McWest, but a lot of these other nuts and bolts researchers who want it strictly to be something that we can measure with a scientific method, we've got a serious conundrum here because they're pulling people out of themselves. And it's either through ritual witchcraft, or not witchcraft, but something along those lines, or it's through some kind of technology of a soul. But whatever they're doing, they're pulling us into their dimension. I think it's a very important point here. It's not just, okay, they're abducting people, poking holes in their skin. They are abducting souls. And in many cases, ladies and gentlemen, we have abductees who think they were bodily abducted, but they were solely abducted, I guess is a term I'll make up and throw it out there. But they believe their body's abducted, but their soul is. And they don't learn that until they get into memory regressions and they realize, oh my God, I remember leaving my body, seeing my body in bed or in the car or whatever, and I'm gone. So what this points to is the disincarnate consciousness, discorporate consciousness that exists outside of the body. Now, what really troubles me is that these entities have no problem whatsoever pulling you out of yourself. They don't ask for permission. Matter of fact, I had somebody comment on my YouTube channel, lit me up as best as she could. You know, you're an idiot. You're not speaking facts. Stealing people's souls, it's against the universal law. First of all, you don't know how big the universe is. How do you know what laws are the universal law? I mean, it's stupid. But the fact is, we have people that don't know the data. We have tons of cases all across the world of people being pulled out of themselves without their permission. So, and that's my little rant. I'll shut up, dude. But
no, man, it's all
good.
Yeah,
that kind of made me mad. I'm like, how stupid? Universal law? What's that?
Well, along those same lines, do you think that there is some sort of duality amongst these interdimensional entities, or do you think that there, you know, some realms are just, you know, pure chaos or pure malevolence, or is there kind of shades of gray in between? What do you think?
Well, I think when we're dealing with the morality narrative, it doesn't really matter what the morality is. You understand? Let me put it to you this way. You can go into a prison and you can have someone who is a famous, murderer. But his victimology is his victimology. If you go in there, like these kind of guys, you know, they'll kill their certain people, and then they'll find somebody who kills somebody else or some kind of other victimology. And in their mind, that's an evil person. I'm going to go kill that guy. Both of them are evil, but they have separate victimologies. And so when you're dealing with researchers who are trying to define the threat narrative, I think it's important to realize it really doesn't matter with their morality. They can think they're doing something for us. They can think they're helping us. But at the end of the day, they're an absolute threat. Let Russia come over and pull the soul out of your son, out of his body. Let China come over here and press pause on everybody in your family. Walk through the wall and snatch you out of yourself. It's insanity what we're dealing with now in the field. We're trying to put lipstick on a pig and make it look good enough to us. And let me dive deeper into this rabbit hole. It really doesn't matter what their morality is at all. Because we're trying to do moral things to us, we still have cases of sexual molestation during abductions. We cannot call it anything else. Okay? Is this all right?
Yeah, of course.
Go
as deep as you want, man. Let's go deep.
Well, let's call it what it is. You know, when we're dealing with men that are being plucked with their wives, like Betty and Bonnie Hill, you know, and they're being performed on sexually, that's molestation.
Now,
you know,
What would you say to those that come back from these experiences and it's completely, you know, like love and light experience? Oh, these beings were wonderful. They gave me messages of love and hope for the future and told us what we're doing wrong to the environment, the planet, all these, you know, great and beautiful things that seem to have no negative effects on that person. Do you think that those are different type of entities or maybe just a deception?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I would lean more towards deception. A lot of these individuals will go back and have regressive memories and realize, okay, yeah, they fell over the love and light. And then when we got into it, I mean, really what they're teaching us is just a bunch of hot air. How do we fix it? You know, what are the actual instructions here? Like when you get into the literature, even in Beyond UFOs, the gamut of explanations for abduction is not like unified. It's this reason, that reason, this reason, 1,000 different reasons. And so what I've learned to do, though, is ignore the explanations. I don't care what these entities are telling us. I don't care why they're manifesting as Dear Edna, or they're manifesting as a widower's husband and trying to coerce her into, you know, sex. I don't care why they're telling us they're doing this for. I think it's irrelevant. I think it's just them running a program on us. Now, when we're dealing with people who come back with very benevolent experiences, I do not believe that that abduction begins and ends there. Like when we get into Betty Lucas' case, she was taught that these entities were watchers. And yet she's in this ship and she sees three people who were seemingly deceased on gurneys and orbs of light hovering over their bodies. And so when I lean towards the abduction accounts, this is, you know, it's all love and light. I really don't buy into that. Because that's not just what's going on here. And in many cases, we have experiencers that will believe it's love and light, and then they start dealing with trauma, sexual unrealized trauma that they go through, and they have to go find a therapist to get these memories out. And so do I believe that there are cases where people are abducted and, you know, they're given, I don't know, gift cards of consciousness where they think, you know, this is all great and everything. The truth is, I'm not going to say it's not happening, but I don't believe in that narrative. Hmm. You know, we're not dealing with anything that just abduct you, high five, let's play chess. I'm going to give you a couple words and you're gone. That just doesn't happen. I mean, what we do have, though, are accounts of people who are seeing dead relatives, dead friends that they didn't know were deceased until they got out of the abduction, get a phone call the next day, and hey, Bob died in a car wreck. Well, I just saw him last night, you know. So I think that, again, when we're dealing with entities that are, you know, love and light and everything, I think there's a lot more going on in the background. And if you look throughout history, we have cases that far outweigh in terms of numbers that far outweigh this, you know, lipstick on a pig mentality. And when you get into it, it's most of the time it's them running programs on us. It's no different. Okay, it's manipulation. It's deceit. Like, it's no different than when you have a 12-year-old who sees Mickey Mouse descend down into his bedroom. Is that Mickey Mouse? No, right? What they're doing is they're working programs on us. And in many cases, behind the scenes, somewhere deep within our subconscious, we understand, we know what happened. We just have to get it out and manifest it. So I do believe there are people that experience that, but I do believe it's still deceit. Don't look at the miracle, right? Right. Look at what's really going on behind the scenes.
I find the idea of a disincarnate consciousness very interesting that can kind of manipulate our perception and manipulate reality. but I also find it interesting that you said that there's a connection to the afterlife with these entities. Do you think it would be possible that, you know, this disincarnate consciousness could be us in the afterlife, or, you know, maybe a form of our consciousness?
I hope not. I hope I wouldn't molest myself in an adult account.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? What's really fascinating about this is when you get into the Jewish literature, Jewish demonology, they actually had captured, I think it was in the Middle Ages, they had actually captured one of these creatures. We didn't get much of a description, but if you look at the knowledge that these entities have, it's fascinating. They were walking, one of these entities, through the streets, and he looked at a cobbler right in the face and told him, the day you're going to die. This is, you're going to die. And he told him, bam, 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 bam. Finally, they had worked a deal with the entity where the entity would just shut up. It wasn't because he was freaking people out. So, but look at the knowledge, right? The foreknowledge. When we're dealing with these entities, they have proven knowledge of death, the afterlife, and knowing when people will die. You get into Betty Luca's case, these entities told her when her sons would die. She immediately went to Ray Fowler and told Ray, the researcher that was working with her, hey, listen, I'm kind of freaking out. I had an abduction experience, and I feel an unholy dread that something's going to happen to my kids. And sure enough, they died. So whatever we're dealing with, again, we're dealing with entities that exist just outside of the body, but they exist in that dimension of death, what we would call death. And when I say that, I'm not saying, okay, death, horns and hooves, pitchforks and all that stuff, but they are disembodied. And I think that it's a fascinating aspect of it, because when we see Chris Bledsoe's work, not even his work, because it's not like his work at all. He's an experiencer, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, his manifestations, his accounts, you know, we're dealing with almost a plasma entity, or an entity that in the Phoenician text, we would call a lil spirit. So it's fascinating, but that's really, I think, what these entities are. I do not believe they were created just as, you know, a soul. I think that they were at one time embodied, and that now they exist in that dimension. But what's also interesting is it's not just that they have a knowledge of the afterlife. You know, I did a lecture on sleep paralysis and incubi cases a couple years ago, and I didn't know it. It was a Zoom conference. I had no idea that there was an abductee in there on the call. And he, at the very end of the lecture, he asked me a very serious question. It was troubling. This kind of connects hauntology with the UFO abduction phenomenon. He said, me and my late wife, he said, we are lifelong experiencers. He said, she was an experiencer prior to us getting married, and vice versa on my end. He said, but, you know, we've been abducted together. We've had a lot of strange experiences. He said, but the strangest thing that ever happened to him was, he said, one night he was sleeping, and about 2:30 in the morning, he said he was fast asleep, his wife was fast asleep, and he felt some rustling underneath the covers. That was a very chilling account. And he said they don't have a dog, they don't have a cat. So he said at first he thought it was his wife, she had maybe restless leg syndrome, or had some nightmare and stuff. And he said he woke up and his eyes adjust to the darkness, and he's looking and he's realizing that this entity was underneath the covers. It was small, but it was moving and shifting the bed enough to wake him up. He sees the blanket draped over the entity. He says, this is really weird. He says, I pulled the covers back, and it's a little girl. She's pale in complexion. She looks dead. He said, I pick her up. He said, Nate, he said, or Nathaniel, he said, I physically picked her up, and I'm looking at her thinking, what is going on? She looks at him and says, my father burned me alive. He killed me and my brother. And he said, when that happened, he said, she looked in the corner of the room, and it was dark, obviously. They're sleeping and in bed at nighttime. He said, and in the corner of the room was a little boy who was just standing there. And he said that the little girl looked at him and said, my dad burned us alive. We're here now. That's my little brother. We're both dead. He doesn't know he's dead yet. Is this all right?
Yeah, that's creepy. But yeah, man.
Very creepy. He said there was physicality to this little girl. She was physically in my bed. Wow. He said, I picked her up and held her like, you know, he held his niece before. And he said, what I don't understand, he said, is that for some reason, I cannot help but feel that the entities that he had encountered in that room were some of the same entities and people he had encountered during his abductions. He said there was a familiarity with this little girl. She knew him. So what are we dealing with here in terms of hauntology, disincarnate consciousness, and what we're experiencing in the UFO abduction phenomenon? I believe that on both fronts, we're experiencing the same thing. I believe that in hauntology and malevolent hauntings, we're experiencing these entities. And I think that for thousands of years, they hid behind the mask and veil of demonology. Now they've shifted the narrative. How about this one? It's almost as ambiguous as the origin of demons. I'm extraterrestrial. Right? And so now we have a new front of warfare, a new front of deceit. Now that it's not just that they're putting masks on and looking like our deceased relatives, or with Ted Rice's grandmother, her husband. They had tried to groom her into intercourse during an abduction account. You know, I've only been with one man. He's been dead now for 10 years. They manifest his apparition, right? So on both fronts, we're working with entities that can sound like us, look like us, manifest to us as our own memories. Why? It's deceit. It's plain deceit.
Now, an interesting kind of point that adds to that is when you look at the history of UFO abductions and UFO encounters, it seems to have shifted with human consciousness. You know, we start out with the Greys, and then now all of a sudden, a few years go by, we have like Nordics and then reptilians all of a sudden. And then it's same with the UFO sightings. You have the old airship sightings, and then it turns into saucers and then plasma ships and, you know, all kinds of new types of little orbs and things that we're seeing nowadays. It seems to have changed with people's perception and consciousness over the years and the way they think about, UFOs or aliens, right?
Correct. That's one thing that's fascinating about how these entities work. They evolve according to our awareness of them. So, you know, like I had a young lady that had reached out to me from India, and these entities were grooming her, trying to, and I use that word grooming loosely, they were trying to condition her, how about that, into intercourse. And she said that she had been with 8 different men in her lifetime. She said that the entities would manifest to her as every one of those men. So again, they're working a program on us. Right? Our awareness of them, her awareness of them. It wasn't a stranger. It was somebody she had already been intimate with, which, it increased the probability of intimacy again, right? You've already been with this individual. You know, the probability of you being with him again is pretty much there. So I'm going to manifest according to your memory of them. And it's not just our memory. It's very interesting too. And it's hard for me as a researcher not to go into the Bible and see some of the things Yahweh preaches against. It's hard for me not to look at that objectively and say, okay, you know, he was knowledgeable about these entities, and there's reasons why he made sure, you know, you didn't have an image of him. There's nobody appearing to people saying they're Yahweh. Why? Because Yahweh told them, you'll never make an image of him.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Very important point here. So it's okay. Let's get back into what I was going to say. So we're not just dealing with the entities that will manifest according to our memory, but they will manifest according to our belief. We have a lot of accounts of people who are seeing a white Jesus manifesting to them, right? A westernized, de-Judaized, Swedish, blonde-haired Presbyterian Jesus, completely ahistorical, right? It's obvious. Yeah. But it's according to a person's literacy and according to what they, in their mind, created an image of him. What do they see him as? So we have abduction accounts everywhere. People say, okay, I called on Jesus. And they say, well, we have Jesus. Which Jesus do you want me to be? Which program should I run on you? You know? And then they manifest again according to the literacy and belief system of that individual. Now, what we do not have, this is fascinating. I do believe Yahweh made this commandment in respect to molters and soul hunters. You shall make no graven image of me. Why? Because later on in the future, there's going to be entities that are going to manifest as Muhammad, Jesus, everything. But they'll never manifest as Yahweh, because Yahweh has no image. He's incorporeal. So he was basically separating himself from the programs these entities would like to work on people. But I think that the base note here that unites both phenomena is that we're dealing with entities that will manipulate us, using us against ourselves and weaponizing our ignorance against us.
Yeah, man, that's so interesting. Now, you used a word that popped out to me a few times, programming. Now, what are your thoughts on this? You also said earlier that they're possibly could be using some kind of technology. Right. What are the possibilities that, you know, we are in some type of grand simulation and there are, you know, some sort of malevolent programmers that can just change our reality at will?
I think that's a very interesting thought. Here's why. When we're dealing with entities that are abducting us from ourselves and splitting us into two, there seems to be two different realities that one person exists in. Why do I say that? Because when we're dealing with people like Betty and Bob Luca, Dr. Carla Turner's work, even David Jacobs' work, we have people who, during their abduction, they're being educated. This is interesting. Oh my God. People like Betty Luca, who it's almost as if they set her down in a ship in a chair where the chair and the object she was working on the ship, it was tailored to her physicality and figure, tailored to her, Christopher. She said it was fitted to her body, everything, her small hands and everything. It was tailored to her. Now, then they begin to educate Betty Luca on how to fly the ship. This is how you do it. You do it with your mind and all this stuff. And she's not alone in this. We have many abductees that this has happened to. But when they get back into their body, they seem to forget all of it, right? And then they go into memory regression, and then it pops up again. Okay, oh my God, there's a portion of memory in that's limited by physically or being physically embodied. Oh, how about that? Right? The soul is placed in the body, it's limited in memory. And so what's been happening is we've had abductees being told by these entities, this is what you're doing, this is how to do it. One day you will do this, but you won't remember it. And then you get back into your body. And then you never fly a ship as long as you live. Why? Right? Why? Because there's the body that lives in one dimension and the soul that lives in another. They're educating the soul, placing it back into the body. Now, what I also want to make a point here, guys, is we're getting some good stuff here. We're dealing with two different memories. Not just that, but they're educating the soulish part of us. They're not teaching us muscle memory. Right?
Right.
It's not muscle memory. They're teaching the soul. Now, why is that important? Well, because when you get into Ezekiel's wheel in the Bible, the author says that the soul of the creature was in the wheel. Oh. Wherever the creature went, which is the flesh, the soul, wherever the soul went, the wheel went with it. This right here, the merging of consciousness with metal, was first orchestrated in history by necromancers. I don't know if we've talked about that yet, where they took a small piece of metal, carved the name of an unclean spirit in Hebrew,
Tumarula. Yeah.
And then implant that into somebody, and the consciousness of that dead person possesses the body by virtue, get passionate, Chris, by merging its consciousness with metal. Now the metal itself is alive. There's memory in metal. There's emotions in metal. There's a soul in it. And I believe that's why we have, like, I think it's 65% of abductees get on the ship and realize the ship itself is alive. Right?
Right.
Ezekiel said the nefesh, the soul of the creature, is in the metal. Wherever the soul goes, the ship goes as well. And so what's also interesting about that is this is called teraphim, but it wasn't just an act of merging consciousness with metal, but it was a way to prolong the afterlife. It was a way for that soul to remain in existence by incorporating it with something metallic. And do I believe that they were the very first metallic implants? Absolutely. I think they're also using the same technology now by implanting their own consciousness in the metal and then placing that in us.
Man, let's go even deeper with this. So yeah. If this could be, you know, some kind of technology and we are possibly in some kind of programmable simulation,
right.
These entities, do you think that there are, that we're, first of all, do you think that we're trapped here? That this is, you know, you hear an alien abduction theorist saying that we're on a prison planet, that these entities keep us here and, you know, our souls are trapped. Do you think there's any, you know, kind of possibility to that with these malevolent entities that they do have our soul kind of trapped in this realm?
Unless you work with them. Look, we have sages throughout history, especially your Kabbalistic sages, that would perform rituals to conjure these entities. That's why I believe they're not, you know, benevolent. You know, hi, I'm Uncle Tom. Let's go in the, you know, no. These entities, at first, they were connected to by performing ritual magic. You look at Eliphas Levi, especially Aleister Crowley, with the entity he encountered. He had to perform rituals to get to that level. And he would even instruct his disciples, don't you do what I do. Why? Because I had 35, 40, 50 years of experience with them. They don't respect you like they respect me. So you know, our ancestors have quite a few sages that have encountered these entities, but they had to work their way up. And so that's why it's very concerning to me about these people that want to do CE5, you know, events and all this stuff. It's dangerous. First of all, it's like sticking a hand in the ocean and then hoping nothing bites you. You know, you're in a shark infested area here. You're dealing with entities that, first of all, you can't control. Second of all, you can't maintain. You cannot, can't even define. You know, and we're wanting CE5. My God, maybe they'll come over here and communicate. That's fine. But let's look at some of the other communications from people who wanted that to happen. Here, I'll just snatch you out of yourself. How about that?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Now we
touched, you invited me.
Yeah. Now we touched on this a little bit last time, and this goes a little bit deeper into this whole phenomenon, is the aspect that these people are meeting hybrid children, that they're having experiments done on their DNA, having sperm and eggs removed. And some of these abductees are, you know, actually, like I said, meeting what they're telling them is their hybrid children. What do you think is going on really behind this phenomenon? Do you think that these entities are really hybridizing themselves with humans?
I think the hybridization program is about hatching consciousness. And I do believe that this consciousness that they're hatching is for whatever purpose. It's the same reason they're pulling souls out. They're studying souls, studying consciousness. Now they're hatching it through the hybridization program. Also, I believe that a lot of these children are bodies, at least, are being skin suits for people who are dying. This is very interesting. We have a case study. Dr. Carla Turner is working with a lady, and I forget her name, but it doesn't really matter because it wasn't even her real name. You know what I mean? That's what Dr. Carla Turner said. It was the fake name. Anyways, she was abducted, and in the abduction account, she had had a sexual encounter with these entities. A couple, 2 or 3 months later, she's pregnant. She tells her husband, this is not a viable fetus. That's her terminology, a very unique way of framing it. This child will not survive. Okay. I want to make sure everybody understands the distinction. I'm not saying this is a natural born child, right? This isn't, you know, people that are having intercourse and then they have pregnancies. These are children that are being born from, right, abductions. There's a difference because I have people, you know, that blow me up. Oh my God, you know, the vaccine is creating a bunch of, you know, miscarriages. I'm not talking about that. You understand what I mean? We're talking about pregnancies that are happening from the abduction accounts, not from, you know, a husband and a wife and all that stuff. It's a completely different subject. Anyways, she tells her husband, you know, this baby is not from our union, but it's not going to survive. She knew that. How did she know? Why did she know? Who told her that, right? Sure enough, the baby dies and she has the missing, well, it wasn't even missing fetus syndrome. She actually had, I think, I don't know, she needed a pastor to something that happened where the baby had died. And then she goes and she's abducted again. This is very interesting. During the abduction account, they do something that we've heard for years. It's a common motif in the phenomenon, but they bring her a hybrid child. And during this encounter, or not even encounter, during this regressive memory session with Dr. Carla Turner, the woman begins to get emotional, right? She's having an emotional reaction to this story, starts crying. She says, and something that I cannot understand occurred. She said, the child, the hybrid child they gave me, had the consciousness of the deceased child that I lost. It. She said they had taken the consciousness out, placed it in the body, the skin suit, the avatar, if you will, of the hybrid child. So what this means, and this is what I'm leaning towards, they're not just taking hybrids. They're not just creating different fetuses and whatnot. I believe that for some way, just as the larva produces the butterfly, they're creating consciousness by creating the body and harvesting the consciousness from it, which falls in line, again, with something very troubling. Because if they're creating hybrids, does that hybrid have a soul? Does it have consciousness in and of itself? And or are they taking their consciousness and placing it into these avatars, right? And each generation of hybridization looks more and more human to the point now where you can look at a human being and not realize there's consciousness that's dead in a living body. Now, we have that cases like that in the Nephilim. It's exactly what it was. Matter of fact, not just that. But the technical definition of the Dybbuk or the Dybbuk was the impregnation. Hello, hybridization from the impregnation of the dead in the bodies of the living. It's the same systematic way that they've been manipulating Earth and humans.
Man, now I want to talk about these entities that you mentioned earlier. I know we may have talked briefly about them before, but Molters and Soul Hunters. Could you tell us about what exactly these are?
So a Molter, I got the idea from visiting my brother one day. He has a tarantula. So one day I'm sitting there looking at a tarantula, poking on the window, trying to get him to react. And my dumb butt. And then 5 minutes, man, my brother finally goes, you idiot, that's not it. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, that's its skin. I said, what do you mean? Yeah, the actual tarantula is over there in the corner just watching you like an idiot. Like you're an idiot, you know, thinking, well, I kind of am at this point. And so I realized that when you have the same creature in two places at once, right? It's a similar effect as when we had Bob Luca, two places at once. We have his body, and we have whatever grows out of his body. Okay. So that's called molting. Now, the molters that we're dealing with, again, we've been dealing with them for millennia. The same entities we encounter in Genesis 6, who are, you know, deceased people who are being reborn through children that they create, possessing them in perfect possession, as Malachi Martin would call them. And then when that body dies, they molt it. They leave that body and they step into a new one. Now, these entities have evolved. They've mutated in their pathology and what they've been doing. These entities, these people, personas, were first described on the battlefield. This is James Frazier's work on the Golden Bow, where in antiquity, they would be on the battlefield. They would be mortally wounded. And a way to survive, they would dispossess their own body, molt it, right? They'd leave it. And then they would place their soul in something or someone else so that their body dies, but their consciousness lives on. Now, that phenomenon in demonology, we would call that possession. It wasn't just the relocation of consciousness, right? You following me? But it was the replication of life. I'm not doing this just to relocate my soul. I'm doing this to replicate the life I had. It's very interesting. So we have here in the evolution of possession, it's transient at first. They would possess statues, okay? We're getting into the late Iron Age where people would have dead ancestors, you know, Uncle Ted died. They would bury them in their basement. They'd go out to an artificer of metal, which the Bible talks about. They would create an image of Uncle Ted. And then the consciousness of Uncle Ted would then possess the image itself, right? Then they evolved to taking consciousness, merging it with metal, and then placing the metal into people as implants. And now that person becomes possessed by the unclean spirit, right? See how they're evolving? So then transient possession would be, you know, a spirit. Like, let's say me, you know what I look like, right? Obviously. So what happened is, let's say I die, and then I go possess a man that looks nothing like me. I'm 5'8". Let's say I possess a guy that's 6'5". Black hair, well, you know, a lot skinnier than I am. That's called transient possession. That's what a lot of these entities will do. Well, finally, they started realizing that it's not good enough. I don't want to just possess people that have bodies. I don't want to commandeer their consciousness and live life through them. I want a body that looks like me, right? I want a body that looks like my apparition. So in Genesis 6, according to the Apocrypha of John, it says, and look at this. This sounds like an abduction account. These entities manifested to women in the images of their husbands, right? It's right out of the abduction phenomenon. We would call them incubi. But again, that's just the way they did it. That's not who they are. It's the way they're doing this. Anyways, they manifested in the image of the husbands when the husbands were gone. And you see this narrative, even through the creation story, when Adam was missing and then an entity manifested, right, to Eve. So it's a common thematic element to our history. Anyways, they manifested these women in the image of the husbands. They conditioned them in the intercourse. At the moment of conception, again, what are they wanting? They're wanting a body that looks like the apparition. Right? You don't want transient possession. I'm done possessing your Aunt Edna. I don't want to do that anymore. I want me. And so what they did is during the act of intercourse, at the moment of conception, I'll leave that to your imagination. They inseminated these women, the seed, and then they stared directly into their eyes, another common motif in the abduction phenomenon. While they're staring into their eyes, they reverse their apparition. What I told you? I want a body that looks like me. They reverse their apparition of what they really look like. Whoever their personhood was, that's who they manifested to the women as after they groomed them, after they conditioned them, during the insemination. Now I am who I really am. It's my apparition looking you in the eyes. Now, the reason they did that is because that's what's called an obstetric tradition. The belief was whatever man, the image of the man, the woman was focused upon at the moment of conception, she would birth the material image of, right, through her womb as a child. So what you have now is their evolution, their mutation, right? Now we have the entities that have bodies that look like their apparitions. Brilliant.
Yeah.
These entities are very intelligent.
Wow, that's interesting. What about soul hunters? What would you describe these as?
The soul hunters is what we're dealing with in the UFO abduction phenomena. It's we've been dealing with this at least since Ezekiel chapter 13 was written. So we're talking thousands and thousands of years. What happened, and again, this is why studying demonology is important. In demonology, especially in the Old Testament, we have what are called the snare of the fowlers, the snares of the fowler. Now, to us, you know, the westernized mind, we wouldn't understand what that meant. First of all, what's a snare? You're trapping birds, right? It makes no sense at all. But what you have to look at is the symbolism. The bird they're talking about that's being trapped, being summoned and plucked out of people was the Egyptian Ba'asol. It's a little spirit in Phoenician texts. They believe that at the moment of death, the consciousness, the living persona, memory, consciousness of that individual would leave the body. We would call it an orb, but they called him Ba'a. It would leave the body and float away like a bird, right? And I do believe in orbs. I don't believe they're all dust particles. I've seen dust particles before, but you know, there's evidence of actual orbs existing. But that's what they believed. And so what was happening in that period of history is we would have people sleeping. And that portion, it sounds like the abduction, guys. I mean, it's right there in front of us. That portion of their existence, the bird, the orb, would be pulled out of their body. And so what these people began to do is they would create what original form of dream catchers, right? They would put amulets around their chest, around their faces, so that when the soul hunter, right? You see the symbology here, the soul, the bird hunter, the orb hunter, when the soul hunter would arrive, in many cases, it would stare at them eye to eye, just like they did in Genesis 6. And so what we had is we had people that were creating second selves. They would create a face, okay? A second face in hopes that when they're sleeping at night, the entity would be looking into the wrong eyes, right? And not be able to pull their soul out of their body. Now, that is this good? Is this making sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's dive deeper. When we start to understand that, we see the snare of the fowler, and we see that this is a very real threat to the ancient mind. It wasn't a figment of their imagination. You know, it wasn't them demonizing famine. You know, I mean, I'm really hungry. It's the demon of hunger. No, they were experiencing entities that we're still experiencing now, right? That would walk up in your house at nighttime and steal you from yourself while you're sleeping. And so what they believe, again, this is very interesting too, they would call these entities dream demons. They believe that these entities would go into the house at nighttime, and if you weren't already asleep, they would induce a sleep state in you and then pull your soul out of your body and do things to it. Now, the most alarming and I guess glaringly obvious reference to these soul hunters comes out of Ezekiel chapter 13. Yahweh is at war with these entities, and he says, I have a bone to pick with you. And he makes a reference, a really strange, obscure, but dark reference. He says, those who hunt the souls of men to make them fly. Now, for the modern 21st century, might it be hard to put into context until we have people like Bob Luca, who had his soul hunted and was made to fly. right? Betty Luca, who was in bed sleeping, it's exactly what these entities were doing, right? It's exactly what we have in the literature. She's sleeping. Her husband, Bob, feels like he should be awake. He wakes himself, wakes up, doesn't know what's going on, leans over, looks at his wife as they peel her soul out of her body. So, hunters, those who hunt the souls of men to make them fly. Now, again, we're dealing with symbolism, the Baal soul, the orb. Betty Luca was in a, again, she's in the abduction account. She sees three different corpses on three different tables in that soulish portion, that Baal, that bird soul is hovering one over each of them. It's classic. So Yahweh knew of these entities. One thing that is very interesting that I need to do more research on is he makes a reference to what I call the currency of consciousness. And he's talking about entities that are necromancers. They're necromancers. He says that those who should die, these entities, I told you they're replicating to survive. Those who should die are living. Here's how. Because those who should live are dying. I would take that, and I don't know how much time we have, maybe 10 more minutes, 5 minutes.
No, oh, you're good.
About 30 you're good. Seconds. Okay. what I would suggest is that we need to be looking at abduction accounts differently and stop just, you know, focusing on the nuts and bolts and they're taking semen and ova and all this stuff. There's an aspect of this where I do believe these entities are killing people who should live so that they themselves can survive. Wow. That is the currency of consciousness. And I do believe that's why they're hatching consciousness and using them as batteries or as a tool, a source of energy for their existence. You cannot have the body without the soul. And I think they're using that program to hatch consciousness in the hybrid.
Let's close on this. This is deep. The audience may have to listen to this one twice. What are your thoughts on angels? Do you think that they are benevolent celestial entities that are, you know, created from source that watch over humanity, basically? Or are they something different? Are they just messengers?
Well, it depends. The way our ancestors interpreted their presence in the world was if the angel gave them a good message, they were good. They gave a bad message, they were bad. That's basically how it was. You know, I grew up in evangelical Christianity, and so I was always taught that angels, you know, they were, they're not men and women and all that stuff. But, you know, when I got back into texts that our authors of the Bible read, see, I want to make this point too. You want to understand what they're writing. You have to understand what they read. And so it wasn't until I got into some more ancient texts and started realizing that there's a different term for angels. That's malakim, but it's a different definition. Malakim could also mean deceased ancestor. Someone who has died and they've evolved versus these entities, these soul hunters who died and they mutated. These ancestors died and they evolved. They become what's called in Elohim. Now we see evidence of that. It's very interesting, guys. Oh, God. We see evidence of that when the Witch of Endor, when Saul goes to the Witch of Endor, and she pulls the soul, the nefesh, the Ba'ah. Really, it was the apparition of Samuel. Samuel comes out of the earth, and then this is what she says in Hebrew. She says, I see an Elohim coming out of the earth. Why? It's quite literally like Gandalf the Grey, right? Who went to Gandalf the White. He evolved, right? He went a different dimension. Now he's not just Samuel. It's Samuel 2.0, somebody you really don't want to mess with, you know? So we have all, and I'm going to say this to you, we also have evidence of them being deceased ancestors, or at least people in the Bible believing this. When you have Peter in the New Testament, Peter's family thought that he had died, that he had been murdered. And yet they see Peter knocking on the door. They look through the people and see it's Peter. So then they look at each other and said, it must be Peter's angel, right? It looks like, at least to me, they're employing that terminology not as if it's Peter's angel that looks like Peter, but it's Peter's apparition, right? Peter died, and now we're looking at the angel, the Malachim, deceased ancestor version of Peter. We see that all throughout the Bible, but many people miss it because they want to, you know, they want to narrate the framework in a very evangelical way. But if you look at it from the Middle Eastern mind, that's really what these entities were. So do I believe, I do believe that many of, if not all, of these entities that we call angels are deceased ancestors who are now working on behalf of Yahweh for our good.
Man, this is so interesting. Nathaniel, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Before you head out, you were saying that you've been working on some new stuff, researching some stuff. You got anything that you'd like to talk about that you've been working on before you head out?
Just portals. And I think, I think that many times what we're calling UFOs are actual portals. You take your finger and dip it in water and you move it. There, we're calling it UFOs because we have the goldfish effect. Really, when they pull us into their ships, they're really pulling us into themselves, into their dimension, to which I do believe that once we're in that dimension, they have access to us in ways they don't when we're in this four-dimensional reality. That's really where my research is going, you know, and how they're splitting people in half. Why they're doing that and just how they can do that. But obviously I'm way off on having any kind of tangible hypothesis. So when I have one, you know, I'll come back on.
This is so interesting. Well, Nathaniel, let the audience know if they want to find out more about you, best way they can find your book, social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, dude, I'm all over social media. I don't have a website. I don't know if I need one. I think, you know, most people are like, man, you got to have one. If you have a website, you have social media, Instagram, I have a YouTube channel. By the way, subscribe to my YouTube channel. From time to time, I update people on my research. Dude, I've got almost 800 subscribers now.
Oh, nice.
And I've only had like 3 videos. And I promise I'm going to put more content out there. I just, you know, as Chris told you guys earlier, I had COVID for like 3 weeks. So I didn't have a voice, and even when I did, I didn't feel like doing anything. It was crazy, man. I just laid down and watched Frasier for years. That's how to find me, man. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, and that's how you can keep in contact with me and follow my work. But it's been so good to be with you guys tonight, man. I had a blast.
Yes, this was great. Great discussion, as always. And we're going to definitely have to do it again, man.
All right, buddy. I'll see you.
Yep. Thank you so much. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We'll talk again tomorrow.